Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. She visits most often during our membership drives at WOSU. I promised I'd bring her back for a freebie day of just constant comment and talk and questions, and I have. Grammar girl, I don't know if I said that grammatically properly, but Mignon Fogarty, you're with us now. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, good morning, Ann.
You know, partly when I'm talking to you, you're really easygoing and super friendly, but I do find myself either saying really stupid things, grammatically incorrect things, or checking myself a lot. Are people like that around you?
They are. When people send email to me, they'll include blanket apologies for errors they haven't found. And when I first started being Grammar Girl, even my family was nervous speaking around me. I got nervous myself. I found when I started writing so much about language, my writing, the quality of my writing actually went down because even I was nervous about what I was doing in the beginning, and I would use simpler words and sentence structures to avoid making mistakes. And
which isn't a bad thing.
Right. I mean, when in doubt, rewrite.
Shorten, make the small. You know, there's always the, you know, the dollar words versus the dime words. And nine times out of ten, it's, you know, the shorter word is better anyway.
Right. Yeah. But I'm not picky like people think. I don't judge people very much based on their language because, you know, after doing this for so long, I see just how many errors there are to make. You know, even people who think they're language experts will make, you know, many errors in a day as they're writing or speaking because, I mean, there are, you know, books about this, hundreds, 500 pages long with every little rule about English. So there's a lot that you can get wrong, and most people don't know all the rules. So it's helpful if you don't know, look something up. I mean, just admit what you don't know.
Lots of times, though, to explain it, it's helpful to use current events or popular culture or things that we're familiar with now versus, you know, something that might not make sense and may sound kind of, I don't know, stilted and dated, and it's hard for us to understand rules when we're talking about dated things. And one of the things you do in Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing is use popular references like Gwen Stefani's, you know, interpretation of If I Were a Rich Man Girl.
Right. Oh, and I love when there is a pop culture tie-in, a grammar emergency in the news.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorites last year was when Donald Trump corrected Cyndi Lauper on Celebrity Apprentice. She said, "I feel bad." And he said, "No, you feel badly." And she said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she was embarrassed. But Donald Trump was actually wrong, and Cyndi Lauper was right. So he bullied her into apologizing when she wasn't wrong. So that made it great.
And we've talked about bad versus badly before.
Right. Yeah. So the right way when you're talking about your emotions is to say, "I feel bad," because feel is what's called a linking verb. So most people didn't even learn about this in school, but verbs like is and then are, well, is a linking verb. But then there are these tricky verbs such as feel and smell that can describe an action or a state of being. And when they describe that state of being, like having an emotion, they're called linking verbs. And you use bad instead of badly with a linking verb. So when the way to remember it, smell is much easier because, well, if you say, "I smell bad," that's the state of stinkiness. But if you say, "I smell badly," that means your sniffer isn't working.
That means your olfactory senses aren't working right. Great. Well, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you'd like to speak with our guest this hour, Mignon Fogarty, the Grammar Girl. She's author of a couple books. One's Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, and the other one is the Grammar Devotional, right?
Right, yeah. The Grammar Devotional, a year's worth of daily tips.
Do you ever want to make do another year's worth? Don't you get ideas when we're talking about popular culture? Do you get just ideas for more, or are you satisfied with your blog and your?
You know, I have three more books coming out
of
in July,
you do.
And I'm working on two more. So
wow!
I have a lot of books in the pipeline. The books I'm working on now are these interesting little short. They're 101 words books. 101 words every high school student should know, or 101 words smart people use. And I've had just fun time learning about the origins of all the different words, the etymology.
You know, one thing we didn't finish up the last time you were on the show, and I can't remember if it was during the fun drive or the time before that, but the top 10 made-up words. It started with Sarah Palin confusing refudiate for repudiate.
And then, that's the only one I remember.
Yeah, and then calling it a new word, and it got you to thinking about other made-up words. And you said refudiate might not have much staying power, but most of the following 10 words listed in order of acceptability are likely to be with us for a while. And the least acceptable was irregardless was number 10. That was the least acceptable, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the other ones in between, I never even heard of, like frindle. I wasn't sure about that. What's that even from? Am I really
frindle.
Out of it? Frindle.
Oh, I have heard, I remember that, but I don't remember what it means.
Okay.
Is it from a book? There was a child's book. Yeah, it's a children's novel.
Okay.
And the frindle is a word that Nick, the fifth grade character, made up. It's the name for something like a pen.
Okay.
But the whole book, it sounds like a very cute premise, because the whole book is about a boy who wants to make up a word. And so it's about how he goes about trying to get people to adopt the word that he made up, frindle. Yeah.
And then there's ginormous, and we know what that is, and people kind of know it's not a proper word. They don't.
Right.
You know,
and if I remember correctly, people are surprised ginormous older than people think. People think it's a new word, but I think it's been around for, you know, maybe 20 years. It's not as new as you'd think.
And then truthiness, of course, is Stephen Colbert.
The wonderful Stephen Colbert.
Right.
I haven't watched his show in a while, but he has that segment, The Word.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah, it can be kind of astounding. And then cromulent. Do you remember that word?
Yes, from
What's
The
that?
Simpsons.
Oh, okay. See, I...
The Simpsons, you know, people think of it as a cartoon, but they have brilliant writers, and they're always weaving in things from history and English. They make up words. They've made up cromulent means something along the lines of acceptable. That's a perfectly cromulent word. That's a cromulent color for the house. But, dough, what Homer says, has made it into the dictionary as an exclamation.
Like D-O-H, and, right?
Yeah, D-O-H. I always forget where to put the apostrophe.
Uh-huh.
And there are a couple of other words that they made up that have made it into the dictionary. The Simpsons, linguists love watching The Simpsons. I believe there's a whole blog from a linguist who watches The Simpsons and comments on their language use.
My intern and screener, Jeff, says that frindle is a pen.
Okay, good.
It is definitely a pen. 614-292-8513. Before we get to the calls, though, I just want to get through this list. Locavore. Now, locavore is a pretty acceptable word now.
It is, and that one is quite new. A couple of women in San Francisco made the word up to describe the movement they were trying to get off the ground of eating local foods. And they really just sat down, and I think they were under a tight deadline because they had to make up a word for a news article, mm-hmm. for an interview. And they said, well, local and carnivore, those go together. And they made it up pretty quickly, and, you know, it was such a logical and easy-to-say word that it actually caught on. It's actually hard to coin a new word. Most of them never catch on. So, yeah, the fact that we still use locavore.
Well, here's the number one acceptable word that I can't believe isn't or was never and hasn't always been a real word, and that's frugal.
Frugal, yeah.
Who made that one up?
I don't remember. I'm looking it up now.
Because that's what you put down as that's the most acceptable made-up word is frugal. So, well, that's what you said.
I know. I'm.
I've stumped Grammar Girl. This is like, you know, we saved this show. We'll repeat it several times, and in the meantime, I'll take some calls. Bill from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
I wonder if you could help me with a personal problem. I cringe inwardly whenever I hear the word utilize. It seems to me pretentious and completely unnecessary when we have a perfectly good word like use.
I agree.
And
I agree.
Moreover, on NPR, I recently heard a commentator use the word utilizations.
Yeah.
Instead
of
uses. Anyway, if you could start a campaign to bring back use, I would certainly appreciate it.
That falls into the class of, there's a lot of business jargon that people use because they think it makes them sound smarter. They'll say utilize instead of use because it's one of those long $10 words like we were talking about at the beginning. And when the shorter word is the better word. Another one people in business often use is they'll say myself instead of me.
Mm-hmm.
They send that memo to Bob and myself. And it should be Bob and me. But for some reason, people, when they get nervous or they're trying to sound important, they think myself sounds better. It's a very common error. But, you know, just try to tell people, remember, to me. You know, send it to me. Give it to me. And if you add someone else into this, if you add someone else to the sentence, that doesn't change anything.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Mignon Fogarty. She's the Grammar Girl, author of a couple books, and apparently three more coming up this summer. So stay tuned. We're going to take a break right now. If you have a question or comment for Mignon, though, I encourage you to get them in early. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Now more than ever, public media needs your support. I'm WSU General Manager Tom Ryland, asking you to add your voice to 170 million Americans for Public Broadcasting. Sign up now at the website 170millionamericans.org, and thank you.
Connect Ohio wants to get every citizen online. With high-speed internet service, you can do more than you ever imagined. With free classes, it's easy. You can work from home, run a business online, or get a home visit from your doctor on a computer. Get connected with free computer classes at your local library or community college and find out what you can do with broadband. To enroll, call Connect Ohio at 1-855-NOW-I-CAN. That's 1-855-NOW-I-CAN.
And it's 43 degrees in downtown Columbus, a mix of sun and clouds today and a high right around 45 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 20. Mostly sunny again for Thursday and a high of 45. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mignon Fogarty. She's the creator of the Grammar Girl podcast, and also she's written a couple books, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing and the Grammar Devotional. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And George from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Greetings. Good afternoon. Is it correct to end a sentence with a preposition? And two, when I'm on the East Coast, like in Boston, I hear this word somewheres. Where is that coming from?
A plural, somewheres.
Yeah, I mean, there are several words I hear, but there's somewheres, and I'm not, where is that coming from? I mean, what's the history behind that, if you know? I'll listen to my question off the air. Thank you.
Okay, ending a sentence in a preposition?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people think it's wrong to end a sentence with a preposition. A lot of people were taught that in school, but you would be hard-pressed to find a modern language expert who says it's always wrong to end a sentence with a preposition. If you can leave the preposition off the end, then you should. So the classic example is, where are you at? There was a cell phone commercial where it had everyone saying, where are you at? And the at on the end is unnecessary because where are you means the same thing. So if you can chop off that preposition, you should, because it's unnecessary. So you should say where are you, not where are you at. But there are many sentences where it would be awkward to avoid that preposition at the end. So if you're struggling and it's awkward, then it's fine to go ahead and end with a preposition. You know, for example, you could ask, what did you, you know, if your friend stepped in gum, you might say, ooh, what did you step in? And that's a very natural way of saying it. If you wanted to avoid that preposition at the end, you might say, ooh, on what did you step?
Oh, yeah, that's real. That really slips off the tongue easily.
Yeah, that sounds like you're in the, 18th century. So, if you find yourself making awkward sentences to avoid the preposition, then you go ahead and use it. But just make sure it's not unnecessary.
What and about somewheres?
Well, I've noticed this with and towards, and there are a number of words where people have started adding S to them. I mean, they haven't started. They've been doing it for a while, but the proper word is anyway, and the proper word is somewhere, but there are regional dialects, and people speak differently, but, a lot of people say anyways, even though it's wrong. And so it must be a thing on the East Coast where people are saying somewheres, even though that's wrong too. So it is an error. But these things, they do seep into language, and I've been noticing a lot with them anyways.
So. Mort from Northeast Columbus, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. Just want to comment on a little joke I sometimes pull on people with misusing a word. The correct word is regardless. The misuse is irregardless,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I'll throw out irredisregardless just to see what kind of reaction I get.
You just like to mess with people.
Sometimes they look at me like, where did you come from? Or, how dumb are you? And sometimes it goes right by, maybe because they didn't really hear it. Anyway.
Thanks for your call, Mort.
Thanks.
Take
bye.
Care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And let's see, I think it's Kermit from Hilliard. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
I've been noticing, I wrote a letter to the editor recently, what with Madison, Wisconsin, Columbus, Ohio, being so frequently in the news lately as regards the labor
Right, the Senate Bill 5 and the collective bargaining stuff, yeah.
And as your earlier caller said, I cringe every time I see the use of capital, T-O-L, used where in the past I was taught and would always use capital, T-A-L.
For
and
the
I'm
states.
Wondering if this is something that has come so frequently to use that it's acceptable.
No, sometimes there are errors that become, they're used so often that they do become acceptable. I fear that irregardless is going that way because it's made it in the dictionary as non-standard, and someday it may seep into actual standard English. But misspellings like that with a capital with an A for capital with an O usually don't become accepted as standard English. They're still considered misspelling.
So what are the distinctions? When do you use OL or AL?
Well, the way that I always remember, a little memory trick, I love putting memory mm-hmm. tricks in my books, and capital with an OL, I always think that the O stands for the round O of the rotunda. It's like the building. So capital with an OL refers to buildings. So the state capitol building or the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., okay. That's capital with an OL. And think of that O as representing the tall dome on top of the building.
Okay.
And then capital with an A, that's what's confusing, is it capital with an A refers to the actual city.
Yeah.
Of the capital. So you've got the building is different from the city, and they sound the same, but just remember the O is for the dome and
so
the building.
So capital of Ohio is AL, capital building is OL.
Exactly.
Kermit, thanks for your call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. We have some emails, too, if you want to email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is the Grammar Girl, Mignon Fogarty. From Brent, he says, my kids say on accident, and I tell them it's by accident. Please help me win this argument, please.
That is the most fascinating thing, because a linguist did a study about it and found that, today it would be probably children under 15, probably by now, given that the study's old, almost universally say on accident. And anyone over about 35 universally says by accident, and they have no idea what caused people to start saying on accident instead of by accident. But that actually is one of those things that probably will become standard usage and not considered an error. Prepositions are tricky anyway because sometimes there is no right answer. You know, when do you say you're at a restaurant versus in a restaurant?
Yeah.
I mean, either one works, and people who are learning English have the hardest time with prepositions. But, yeah, what's fascinating is it's a sort of a nationwide change, and nobody knows what caused it. I speculate that it must have been some children's TV show, but...
Could you just say accidentally, or is that not necessarily the same usage?
I guess it would depend on the sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could certainly recast it, I'm sure.
An email from Edward says, most people say heights and width. Is it height or heights?
Oh.
I think we had that before.
You know what? I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. But just looking at it, the spelling of heights doesn't look right. But, you know, what do I know?
Yeah.
614, let's see, 292-8513, and Ashley in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. In regard to the word advisor, when is it appropriate to spell it with an E-R opposed to an O-R?
Oh, yes. Oh, I remember both spellings are acceptable, but one is preferred. I covered that in the grammar devotional, and let's see. Here it is on page 216. The form with the E, advisor, is the preferred form, but the advisor with an O isn't wrong. So there are actually two spellings out in the wild.
Is like one British and one American or something like that?
Usually that's the case. But I don't think that's true for advisor and advisor. I've had a flurry of questions about the word canceled lately and whether it's with one L or two, and that's a British versus American thing. The British spelling is with two L's, and the American spelling is with one L. Almost always the simpler spelling with fewer letters is the American spelling, mostly because Noah Webster made those changes when he made the first Webster's Dictionary. He just decided to spell words more simply. So I put them in his dictionary, and that's what we use now. But I don't think the two spellings of advisor are a British-American difference. They just both exist.
Okay. Ed from Baltimore, welcome to the show.
Yes. Before I get to mine, I just want to throw in what else confuses things is when you get capital idea or capital letter.
Oh, good question.
Yes, but mine is, where did the word actuate come from? Because I've started to see it in the last couple of years on traffic signs. Please pull forward to actuate signal. And wait a minute, does that make me an actuary? Because I have never heard of the word or seen it except when it's used on those signs.
Shouldn't it be activate? Shouldn't it be activate, Ed? Oh, Ed left. But
I have never seen actuate. It must be something they're using on signs in Ohio, but I haven't heard. I pulled it up from my dictionary, and it's an old word. It's from around 1600, so it's not.
What does it mean?
Let's see. It means to incite or move to action, to put into action.
It's shorter than activate.
But it sure seems that's one thing. You want signs to be clear. And so to use a word that isn't common on a road sign seems ill-advised.
All righty. Natalia, from Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I actually thought about this for half the time on hold. I couldn't think of a sentence because this word is so foreign to me. When people put any more in sentences where they don't belong, people go to shopping malls anymore. People go to shopping malls these days anymore. How does that word get into the end of a sentence like that?
I can think of it better with people don't go to shopping malls.
Yeah, but that's why it took me so long to think of a sentence, because I couldn't think of that word in a sentence. It just doesn't belong there. But I grew up in Pennsylvania and I never noticed it there. But I moved to Ohio and I hear it all the time.
It's always Ohio. Blame everything on Ohio.
No, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and that would be a normal sentence there. Nobody goes to shopping malls anymore.
Yeah, but they don't say nobody goes. They say people go to shopping malls anymore.
Well, I've heard it at the front of a sentence where people say, anymore, people go to shopping malls.
Yeah, that too. But I heard at the end.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's wrong. It may be used more in different regions.
I thought that it would be incorrect because anymore means something in the past tense, whereas people are doing something anymore. It shouldn't be anymore. It should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To me, it sounds much more natural in a negative construction. You know,
yeah.
We don't do something anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard it in a positive sentence, but I actually don't think it's wrong. It may be a regional dialect thing, though.
Thanks a lot, Natalia, for the call. There is a lot of difference between the spoken word and the written word, right? I mean,
there is. In fact, you know, I just pulled up anymore in my dictionary that a really good dictionary has these things called usage notes that explain these kind of questions that you have. And you know, the one I found says that anymore is used at the beginning of a sentence almost exclusively in speech. So, you know, it's less common in writing, but people will say it. So that's from the usage note at dictionary.com.
Okay. And
I love usage notes.
I do, too. Liz in Westerville, I love you. I mean, we can just hear you explain everything. Liz in Westerville, welcome to the show.
Hi. My question is, I hear graduated from college and graduated college, and I'll listen on air.
Yes.
Thanks.
Every June, we start getting questions about the word graduated as students start graduating from school. So a school does the act of graduating. So Stanford graduates 10,000 students every year. And I don't know if that's
okay.
The right number, but for example. Mm-hmm. And a student graduates from a school. So the correct thing, you know, if your brother David is graduating this year. You'd say my brother David graduated from OSU. So a student graduates from a school. And for some reason, people are starting to use it without the from. They would say David graduated OSU this year, which isn't right. OSU graduates students. Students graduate from a school.
All right. 614-292-8513. Jeff from Bexley, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to try to put the kibosh on that campaign. You can discuss the word kibosh, too, I guess. campaign of use overutilize. I think the two words probably convey a different meaning when used in a sentence like the boy utilized his experience to the fullest, or the boy used his experience to the fullest, or maybe utilized is the word that actually describes whether or not he used his ability or his talent to the fullest versus just used.
You're right. Actually, utilize does have a special meaning that occasionally is appropriate. So I think it means to use for its intended purpose.
Hmm.
You know, so what's a good example? You'd utilize scissors to cut your hair. Maybe.
Potential is one I heard, I guess, a lot growing
yeah.
up. Jeffrey is not utilizing his potential.
Okay.
Using
yeah.
it, maybe, but not utilizing it.
Oh, interesting.
So there is an instance. A lot of time, probably 70 or 80% of the time when people use would be better, but you're absolutely right that there are instances where utilize is the appropriate word. I shouldn't have disparaged it.
No,
so
it is a word, so there must be. That's a really interesting distinction, though. Thanks, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And now Tom from Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I've actually corrected several people over the years, and in the last 6 weeks on the use of the word a or an when preceding a vowel sound, or a word that in the case of honor,
mm-hmm.
or like an honor.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 6 weeks, I've heard Brian Williams and President Obama in the State of the Union address refer to an historic event. And I always have corrected people to say it's a historic event rather than an historic, and I cite by saying, well, say the snake gave an hiss. Well, you wouldn't say that because it doesn't fit the vowel sound. Am I correct?
You're absolutely correct. I covered this in the Grammar Girl podcast just a couple of weeks ago, and the general rule is that if a word starts with a vowel sound, you use an, and if it starts with a consonant sound, you use a. And there's nothing at all special about historic that makes it an exception to those rules. So, you know, you'd say a history test, he got a hit to third base. I mean, there are all sorts of examples where people will accept that it's a H-I, and then the next word starts with the H-I sound. But for some, actually someone walked out of one of my book signings last year when I said this. There are people who absolutely believe anhistoric is the right way to say it. And I don't know why, because it breaks the rule. There's nothing special about historic.
Well, here's a distinction in my mind, and I'm not saying it's right, but when you say a history, you'd say a history of England.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say an historic look at England, it's different.
No, it's not.
I mean, I know it's not different technically, but it rolls off the tongue differently.
I'm
sorry.
Well, I've always corrected people, but it is funny when you hear the president and a nightly news anchor use it, you begin to second guess yourself. And I've always believed it should be a historic event.
You're right.
Yeah, it's more common on the East Coast for people to believe it's an historic, because with a, you know, with an East Coast accent, people are more likely to say historic, so without that H sound.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say an historic event, I know another word is human. People on the East Coast will say human instead of human. That's another place where people get messed up. So if you had an accent where you said historic, then "an" would be the right word, but it was in standard American English, you know, broadcast English, it's historic, and so "a" is the right word to come before it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye. We are going to have to take another break. We'll get to as many calls as we can, so stay tuned. Eugene in Columbus and Jim in Northwest Columbus will be right with you. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The new documentary, The Last Lions, wildlife filmmakers Derek and Beverly Joubert capture some extraordinary moments, including a fight between one male lion defending his territory against two other males.
It went on for about an hour. It was one of the most dramatic fights we've managed to film in 28 years.
The Jouberts will describe how they made this film on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. And thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up. And it's 43 degrees in downtown Columbus, a mix of sun and clouds today, and the high should reach about 45. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 20 degrees. Another nice day for Thursday, mostly sunny and a high of 45. There's a chance of rain Thursday night and a low of 38 degrees. And then rain showers and thunderstorms are likely throughout the day on Friday, a high of 54 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. Our guest this hour is Mignon Fogarty. She's the grammar girl. If you have a question or comment, we're trying to get to as many as possible, so hang in there. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And Eugene in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I just love your show.
Thank you.
I have a question about usage of two words. One is there is, or there is the contraction. You might say there's a cloud covering the sun. But it also sounds right to say there's clouds in the sky today, but that's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, it is wrong, and you hear it a lot in speech, and you know, on TV, newscasters will say there's firefighters on the way, and it is wrong. It should be there are firefighters on the way, because firefighters is plural. But there are is such a hard combination to say. You know, people in one of my first podcasts I did, I said there's something plural, and I got a bunch of angry emails. It's very easy to do unconsciously if you aren't paying attention, because theirs sounds just so much more natural than there are. But you're right that theirs is wrong when you have it followed by a plural.
Yeah. The other word is instantly versus instantaneously. You might hear a salesman say, the brakes on this car will stop you instantaneously. But that's not correct, is it?
I don't think so. I think that those have different meanings. It would be, you know, in an instant, it will stop you instantaneously. So it'll stop you in an instant versus instantly. They're similar. I bet it's a lot like in a moment versus momentarily. So, you know, if you will... The plane will land in a moment. That means it'll land soon. But if you say the plane will land momentarily, that means it'll just land and then go back in the air again, that it'll just land for a short period of time. That's the very technical difference between those two words.
Yeah.
And I bet I'm not 100% sure, but I bet instantly and instantaneously have similar differences.
All right. I'm just curious. I'm driving through the whole state of Pennsylvania today. Where did you grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Seattle.
Oh, and I thought you said Pennsylvania you lived in for a while.
Oh, no. I said the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
okay.
I know some of that. Thank you, Eugene.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for waiting, too. 614-292-8513. We have a lot of calls, though, waiting. And Jim in Northwest Columbus, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call, Ann and Grammar Girl. I have three if you have time. The first one is, I hear a lot of BBC reporters say, somebody's taking someone to hospital, and I'm curious about that.
Yeah, that's one of the differences between American and British English. Sometimes the British don't use articles the same way we do. So we would say, you know, we're going to the hospital, and they will. They'll say to hospital. That's the standard British way to say it, and it's just one of those cultural differences.
Thank you, Jim in Northwest Columbus for that call. Elizabeth in Mechanicsburg, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a statement and a question. One, I love the use of your rules. I grew up in school learning all these rules. My children learned all these rules. And obviously, I'm not from the area. I am from Eastern Kentucky, and I'm kind of a transplant. Been here for a few months.
Well, welcome.
And yes, you all... Y'all do use some different words here. My question kind of goes along with that. Is I have lived in several different places throughout the country, and I have always, well, of course, I grew up learning, being told, "Oh, people from Eastern Kentucky don't ever talk well. You don't talk good. You don't talk well. Whatever." But I have. In all the places that I've lived, there are people who have good grammar, and there are people who don't have good grammar. And I was wondering if you had had noticed that, if you think there are parts of the country that do and don't have good grammar, just some of your comments.
Well, I think in any community, there are people who you care about their language and don't, and people who are more educated than others. It's more, to me, good language, and especially exceptional language, it's almost like a hobby. You know, if you're really into language and using the right words and you know all the tricky rules, you have to spend a lot of time on it. So it's, you know, there may be people who think it's fun, and it's sort of their hobby to use words properly, and they probably do crossword puzzles and play Scrabble and, you know, and write letters to the editor. And then, you know, then there are people who care about, you know, painting wooden boats. You know, I mean, people have different hobbies. And then, you know, people also have different levels of education. You may have a job where your language really matters. You might be a communicator for the university, and then there are people who have jobs where their language really doesn't matter, mm-hmm. and so they don't have as much of an incentive to focus on it. So I think it tends to be a sort of bell-shaped curve distribution in any community. I wouldn't say there's one part of the country where people have better language skills than another.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call, and welcome to Ohio. 614-292-8513, and Mark from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. I have a comment and a question. An earlier caller asked about the word actuate, and that reminded me that a couple of years ago on the Fred Anderle show, he had a guest, a dictionary editor whose name escapes me, that word came up, and a caller called in who was an engineer, and he said that the word actuate is an engineering term, and as such, they decided that actuate was appropriate for a traffic signal, a mechanical electronic thing. Now, what more specifically is the distinction? I don't know, but actuate is technical.
Well, before you move on, we have an email from Steve who says, actuate is used by engineers, mechanical and electrical, as a description of a device that triggers a mechanism. It might be jargon, but it's common. For instance, a stoplight may be actuated by an electrical actuator that senses electrical signals from the car's engine. Whoa. Okay. All righty then.
Okay. And I also had a question. I wanted to know about the distinction between lay and lie. I always make the distinction in speech, and sometimes I feel almost a little embarrassed because it seems almost stilted, because it seems almost universal now that in spoken English, people don't use lie correctly. So let's say lay instead. And I just wanted to ask the grammar girl whether she thinks that distinction is eventually going to die out, even in written English.
I don't. No, I don't. I think lay and lie. Lie is the present tense. I want to lie on the floor because I'm so tired. And yesterday I lay on the floor because I was so tired. I don't think that we're going to lose those. I really don't. A person takes the action, you lie, like it's to recline, but you lay a pen on the table because it's an object. I just don't see us losing that one. I mean, a lot of people argue that we're going to lose whom, which is sort of a similar situation because you use whom with an object, like you mm-hmm. lay with an object. And I don't even see that going away. Maybe in 50 or 100 years, but certainly not in 5 to 10 years.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark, for that call. 614-292-8513. We have a few minutes left, and I want to read some emails right now. Connie asks, can you talk about when one should use following versus below? For example, the following illustration shows this part in use. The below illustration, also, when should one use follow? Well, let's stick with just follow versus below.
No one's ever asked me that before. To me, they seem interchangeable. I wouldn't. I guess if you were kind of thing, below implies below on a page. Mm-hmm. So if there's a chance that your text could flow to the next page, so it's at the top of the next page, then below probably would not be the better word. You probably following. I'm talking this through on the air, but I think following may be better because it doesn't tie you to any position in space. But in general, I'd consider them interchangeable.
Lisa from Powell, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if she has any idea of what the origin is of why we don't just say group and we instead say like a gaggle of geese or a murder of crow or all these different words for the grouping.
Oh, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer, but I'll look it up because that's a really fascinating point. Why don't we just use group for everything?
Right. My husband and I have looked everywhere, and we can't figure it out.
So. Yeah, and all these funny words for the different animals. It seems mm-hmm. to be
a school of fish. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But it's an interesting question.
Good question, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. 614-292-8513. And Let's see, an email from Kathy. Do you have an easy way to remember when to use an apostrophe S and when not to?
Well, the place I see people getting confused is with pronouns. So you use an apostrophe S to make nouns possessive. The boy's hat, that's apostrophe S. So when you're using nouns, apostrophe S makes them possessive. But then where people often get confused is with pronouns like its and hers and yours. And they're all pronouns. They're not nouns. And we don't use an apostrophe S to make pronouns possessive. So when you're using an apostrophe, it, like we'll do its, for example. Its means it is or it has. It's a contraction like can't or don't. So I think the trick is to remember that pronouns are different, and we don't use an apostrophe S to make them possessive. They have their own possessive forms.
Okay. And just a comment from Sarah, an email via email related to your discussion from earlier. I am 46, and my siblings and I grew up saying on accident rather than by accident. I am from California, so perhaps this was originally a West Coast variation.
Interesting.
614-292-8513, and I'm looking for Brock from Grove City. And Brock, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, I have a couple actually. One is a thing that's come up in education. People are certificated rather than certified. I was wondering where this certificated thing came from. Also, my other question is, what's happening to your welcome? You say thank you, and everybody says thank you back instead of saying you're welcome.
I know. I've noticed that, too, about you're welcome. Another language expert, Brian Garner, who I often turn to, has commented on it. And, the feeling is nowadays, you're welcome sounds very formal. And often you're hearing this on TV or radio like this. If Anne thanked me for coming on, I might say, well, thank you, because it's a good thing for me, too, to be on the radio. It's sort of a reciprocal. We're doing each other a favor. So, you know, the thanks go both ways. And I think that's why you hear it a lot on TV and radio.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call, Brock. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513. And Michael in Granville, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. My question is about using hyphens to connect words together in a sentence to try to express like an importance or to make them stand out. Like, for instance, he was the single best golfer of his time. Maybe you would link single best golfer together. Is that appropriate? Is that even grammatical? Or is that just something we might do in a Facebook sort of place?
Yeah, I wouldn't use it in the example you provided, but his single best, they just sort of go. But there is a way you can, they're hyphenated adjectives. You could say he was a no-nonsense, let's get dinner early kind of guy. And you could connect all those words with hyphens. And,
okay.
And that's an appropriate, that's a sort of a stylistic tool that you can use to create a big compound adjective. You shouldn't overdo it because it draws a lot of attention. You can achieve the same effect by putting those words in quotation marks without hyphens between them. That's essentially equivalent. But
exclamation point at the end instead.
At the end of the sentence?
Yeah, is that screaming at him, like, you know, or is it better to hyphenate or quote? And that's my last question.
No, because you want to tie those words together. So he was a no-nonsense, let's get dinner early kind of guy. Those actually really should be tied together some way with a hyphen or quotation marks. And then the exclamation point would just add extra unnecessary excitement to the sentence. So.
One thing I said at the top of the hour or when I introduced, I said that this was a pledge or a pledge drive free show with Mignon mm-hmm. Fogarty. So I pledge drive, I hyphenated.
Mm-hmm.
So because that modified free or something like that.
Actually,
modified pledge drive or something.
I think you might want to hyphenate with the free too, pledge drive free.
Oh, okay.
That all modifies show.
Luckily, I just said it, and it was in my own script that I wrote. So. All righty then. Michael in Granville, thank you very much for your call. Peg, I'm coming up on Peg in Upper Arlington. There you go. Peg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the difference between the use of most and almost that I think I hear and read incorrectly all the time when people say, most everyone attended the party. Well, it wasn't most everyone. It was almost everyone. Mm. What do you think?
I am thinking about it. I think that most is probably an informal abbreviation of almost. Almost would definitely be the more formal, proper way to say it. I don't think most is actually wrong. I don't think it's wrong, but I would consider it more informal. I think it's a new. A lot of words do become shortened over time, and I think that that's one that has become shortened. It has the same meaning.
Oh, so I should accept it then.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Peg.
Bye-bye.
Joe in Wyandotte County, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just had a follow-up on Natalia's question.
Mm-hmm.
I had an ex-boyfriend, Harvard graduate, also from Pennsylvania, and he would always correct me on anymore. And he said the preferred replacement would be nowadays, so no one goes to shopping malls nowadays.
Yes, and when I did look at the dictionary entry, it had nowadays as a synonym for anymore.
And then, also another East Coast reference to the anhistoric. I had a boss there that never pronounced the H in huge. So mm-hmm. Everybody was huge.
Right. And that story, I was thinking about it during the break because I wanted to tell people I did a lot of research on anhistoric versus ahistoric because this angry woman shook her fist at me and walked out of my book signing. And, I'm willing to think, I make mistakes. Maybe I'm wrong. But I went back again and looked it up, and every major style guide says it should be ahistoric. So
sounds like a huge faux pas on her part.
Thank you, Joe. Take care. Hey, we have one email. We have a lot of emails we didn't get to, but we have one from Peter. It's quickie, and we just have about half a minute left or so. He wants to know if Grammar Girl has a favorite word.
I do. Well, I have a lot of favorite words, but one of my favorite words is kerfuffle. I think it sounds like what it means. It's a big ruckus, and I think of chickens flying through the air, ruffling their feathers around, as someone storms through the yard. So I think kerfuffle is a fantastic word.
Now, I would have thought that was like kind of a made-up word.
No. I should know because it's one of my favorites. I think it comes from German.
Okay.
But I may be wrong.
I love the word, too. Mignon Fogarty, the Grammar Girl, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate
it.
Look forward to your new books. That was Mignon Fogarty. She's the Grammar Girl, author of Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing and also the Grammar Devotional. Thanks for listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher this hour. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 and WOSU 820 Columbus and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.